Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
I'm John Batchelor with my good colleague and friend Gregory Copley. He's in Perth, Western Australia, regarding the Indian Ocean on what Gregory tells me is a beautiful evening, blue skies, and moderate temperatures in the most fundamental part of Australia, where all the good stuff comes from, the resources, and it's wide open spaces. Gregory's out west, means the same in Australia as it does here in the U.S., I've learned. However, we turn to the war fighting, not only in Ukraine and the Middle East, but between NATO and the Russian Federation, we're told, between NATO and the No Limits Partnership of Beijing to Moscow, we're told. This headline from the Financial Times days before the Alaska meeting. Europe builds for war as arms factories expand at triple speed, subhead. FT radar analysis reveals historic scale of rearmament stretching over 7 million square meters of new development. What goes on in this article is to list Germany, Finland, and Britain in particular as growing the scale of their buildings and footprints devoted to armaments. They're reviving the reawakening. There's a picture of 155 shells. Apparently, there's an appetite for them that it cannot be satisfied by any amount of any numbers rolling off. They want tanks. They want artillery. They especially want missiles. Europe is rearming. Once upon a time, this would have been alarm bells in North America and perhaps alarm bells in the rest of Eurasia. Right now, it's seen as a response to Russia. Gregory, the conversation in Alaska must also take into account the commitment by the NATO alliance and indeed the commitment by friends of Moscow. That would be Pyongyang, that would be Beijing, and that would be Tehran to rearm the front there, building towards a day with new weapons such as drones and new missile types. Both sides are well armed again. Are we looking at something we've seen before, an arms buildup on the two sides, feeling each other out, leading to a catastrophe some years in the future? Can we perceive that right now?
Well, we can perceive it only because we can understand that the folly of human leadership, so-called, often repeats itself, even irrationally. There's some talk of how this parallels the start of World War One and the start of World War Two. But these are not valid comparisons. Yes, both of those wars were largely orchestrated by manipulating the media and manipulating general public fears and paranoia. And that's what's happening today. But even the NATO leaders are saying today that the Trump-Putin meeting could have very positive consequences, and that saying that President Trump's the only one who can dampen down the Russia-Ukraine conflict and lead it towards a conclusion, implying that if that occurs, then much of the paranoia in Western Europe would subside. Right now, there's no valid strategic reason why Russia would go to war against Western Europe or Western Europe would go to war against Russia. Neither have expansionist territorial aims against the other. They both can and have been proven to cooperate on the exchange of technologies and exchange of energy and other raw materials. So that is not necessarily an issue either. They're saying, well, okay, they want to have a war. Someone wants to have a war, but why? We're not getting to that as yet. We're not looking at the, if you like, ideological, fanatical reasons which prompted both the fascists in Italy and the Nazis in Germany, or for that matter, the communists in Moscow during the build-up to World War II. They had territorial expansion written into their genealogy, whereas none of the Western Europeans to this date, and neither the Russians now under the anti-communists around President Putin. They don't have any of this territorial expansionism at bay. Yes, they can compete, as countries always compete, in the economic marketplace, but there's no need for a perceived trigger, if you like, for a global conflict, other than paranoia which drives somebody to make a bad move. Now, what we see among these, the Financial Times listing of countries building their or rebuilding their arsenals, are from governments which are inherently weak domestically, and they are looking for scapegoats abroad to shape people's views and take their minds off domestic politics. And I speak specifically of the United Kingdom under a very, very fragile government, Germany under a very fragile government, France under an extremely fragile government, and you even mentioned, FT mentioned Finland. Well, Finland has some real reasons for paranoia over territorial disputes with Russia, and yet there has been no real attempt by Russia to signal that it was after Finnish territory at this stage of its history. So it's about domestic paranoia and political manipulation, which is very cynical, obviously, but that's where it's going. Politicians tend to think that they can play on this paranoia without any consequence, and history has told us that paranoia is akin to kids playing with firecrackers.
The analogy, it's a rough one. Spring of 1968, we were younger men, Gregory, and they moved towards a Vietnam resolution between the United States and the Russian and Chinese communist powers. When we come back, a comment on that, and then we turn to the perceptions of civilization here in the early 21st century. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. He's in Perth, Australia.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.